protests against Publix and the grocery giant's political contributions.
Big money is pouring into Florida elections.
Meantime, there's backlash against one Republican candidate who says Puerto Ricans shouldn't be allowed to register to vote here.
This is the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Publix Supermarkets is known more for its subs than its political activism, but the grocery chain's support of Republican gubernatorial candidate Adam Putnam is generating controversy. And one candidate says Puerto Ricans shouldn't be allowed to vote in Florida, even though they're U.S. citizens.
You can join the conversation statewide across the peninsula through the Panhandle, 305-995-1800 on the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition. It continues with your phone calls after the news. To the Florida Roundup, the statewide edition this hour. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it's Florida's largest private employer. If you're listening to us right now from anywhere in the state, chances are you have bought groceries at a Publix store, right? But even though they're popular, the hashtag Boycott Publix campaign, well, it started trending this week on Twitter. That's because Publix has given Adam Putnam $670,000 in political contributions over the last 3 years. Putnam, of course, is Florida's agriculture commissioner, and he's a Republican candidate for governor.
And Publix Putnam, they both hail from Polk County in Central Florida. Publix says the company is supporting Putnam's candidacy because he's from Polk County and because he's pro-business. But Putnam also is a pro-NRA candidate. He has called himself a proud NRA sellout. He did that last summer on Twitter. He also joined the NRA in opposing gun control measures passed here in Florida after the shooting in Parkland back in February.
Now, Publix has been quick to issue a statement, Tom, saying that the company supports Adam Putnam, the candidate, not the NRA. But now Publix says after the backlash it's been dealing with, it's going to evaluate its process for campaign donations and regrets that the donation to Putnam has caused what it calls a customer divide. Meanwhile, one of the Parkland shooting survivors is leading a protest at two Publix stores later today. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting survivor David Hogg, who's emerged as one of the most prominent voices from that student movement, well, he's organized what's called a die-in protest at the two Publix stores in Parkland. That is scheduled for 4 o'clock this afternoon. So we're going to begin the hour here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look at this, and we want you to let us know what you think. Should Publix stay out of politics? Does the boycott campaign appeal to you, or do you think it's a waste of time? Give us a call, 305-995-1800 to join the show as we welcome Gary Fineout. He's a reporter with the Associated Press. And Dan Sweeney, who writes for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He joins us via Skype. Gary Fineout, let's begin with you. People are talking a lot about this donation to Adam Putnam, a really large one. Of course, Publix has made political donations before. Maybe they just haven't gotten this much visibility or controversy, right?
Well, I think, yes, I think it's important to put these donations in context. The fact of the matter is that Adam Putnam, as the front runner on the Republican side and the establishment candidate, has gotten support from a vast array of businesses. You know, Disney, for instance, has given just as much money and more than Publix has. And to put it in also, I want to make sure you understand, the amount is actually a little bit higher than $670,000. It's probably around as much as $750,000 to $800,000, depending on who you count. Basically what's happened is that it's just not Publix. It's the people who are on the board of directors and the executives and some family members and things of that nature. They've all gone in with Putnam and they've given him all this money. But again, as I was saying, it's like Florida Power and Light, U.S. Sugar, Disney. All of these companies are backing Putnam, and they've given him large amounts of money.
Dan Sweeney, how about the personal donations from even board of director members? Should those be considered Publix donations by the public?
I mean, when you look at these types of stories and, you know, who gives to what, generally speaking, they are. In previous stories about, you know, corporate giving to certain candidates, certainly members who are of corporate boards, their spending has been considered previously, so I don't see why it wouldn't be now. I mean, they are really a reflection you know, the attitudes of that corporation. Although, you know, along with what Gary said, that, you know, a lot of other corporations are giving to Adam Putnam, it's also useful to point out that Publix itself gives to a lot of different candidates, including Democrats and Republicans.
In fact, Dan, you tweeted just the other day, echoing what Gary Finout just said, if it wasn't for Publix, Disney, and sugar, I don't know what Florida politicians would do.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, they are certainly, you know, three of the largest corporate contributors in this state, and they have wield a great deal of power for having that sort of recognition.
Gary, did Dan forget the utility companies in that list a little bit?
Yeah, really. Oh,
I'm sure Dan is quite aware of FPL's generosity to candidates.
Well, it's 305-995-1800. What do you think of this boycott Publix movement? And give us a call. We reached out to Publix about this, by the way, and haven't gotten a response. Gary, find out, you know, Publix is so ubiquitous in Florida. And by the way, not just in Florida, they have more than 1,000 stores across the Southeast. And so how effective can a boycott movement really be against a grocery giant like this?
Well, I mean, I think that's always one of the questions as to the effectiveness of boycotts. I mean, I think we have seen the activism of the Parkland students has had impacts in places. I mean, certainly what happened with Laura Ingraham. And you know, so, I mean, certainly that was causing consternation as she started losing sponsors.
The Fox
and
News host criticized the Parkland students. Yeah, and there was a social media call out to boycott and advertisers pulled from her program.
Right. But I also want to say it also, you know, it does cut some two ways. I mean, I've also seen some people on Twitter who are going the other way and like, oh, well, I just went to Publix. Or you've got some gun groups. I saw some headline on some pro-gun magazine saying something like, you know, don't let the gun grabbers win, go to Publix or something. I mean, so, but I mean, to the point is that Publix is ubiquitous. Publix is everywhere. I mean, they are a very, you know, they're a privately held company that is very, very successful. So, I mean, however, I will say it was interesting to see that as the movement got some trending on social media and what have you, that they actually did come out and say, well, we're going to reevaluate our donations. Now, I don't quite know what that means exactly, but at least it was some acknowledgement that there was some concern over this.
Which is a little bit out of character for Publix, because traditionally not very loquacious when it comes to public statements other than its own advertising.
Yes. They and in fact, I think most of the statements that have been accredited to them have sort of been sort of just, you know, distributed universally. And I don't think I've seen any individual granting any one-on-one interviews with reporters or whatnot.
And if you're just tuning in, it's our Florida Roundup this Friday. Before you head off into the Memorial Day holiday, we want you to spend some time with us and give us a call at 305-995-1800 from anywhere in the state as we talk about this boycott Publix movement on social media. This is in the wake of the big Publix political donation to gubernatorial candidate, Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. What do you think about all this? Of course, this has a lot to do with politics in Florida in the wake of the mass shooting in Parkland at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School as well. Let's begin with Isaac in Jacksonville. Hi, Isaac. You're on the Florida Roundup.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to comment real quick and just say that this came out of nowhere in the morning, really. I think Publix is too big and too loved, really, for this to be happening. In Florida, I see a lot of comments on Facebook of just people in shock. I mean, I have some friends that have worked for Publix for many, many years. They're a great company. I mean, I don't think like anyone in Florida can say something bad about them. And instead of having or trying to have a conversation with maybe the executive team of Publix or the board member of Publix, the board of Publix, this boycott just divides the conversation even more. Instead of having a bipartisan conversation, it feels like now people are picking sides.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
Even more.
That's Isaac in Jacksonville. Dan Sweeney, your thoughts?
I asked our readership about what they thought about this, and you know, Publix's most recent statement mentioned something about a customer divide, and boy, I really found that to be the case. You know, you had basically three camps. You had people who said, yes, I'm boycotting, I'm going to Whole Foods or Lucky's or what have you, and then you had a group that identified with the NRA or with Adam Putnam and said, I'm absolutely not boycotting. In fact, I'm going to Publix more. And then you had this third group, about the same size as the other two, that said, I may agree with, you know, the boycotters. I may, you know, not agree with the NRA, but I'm not going to stop going to Publix. You know, this company is not only ubiquitous, but it's also fairly beloved among a large segment of the population.
Yeah, yeah, and has done a lot of community service work through the years as well. Chris in Pompano Beach in South Florida joins us here on the Florida Roundup. Chris, go ahead, your thoughts.
Exactly the thought from before. Publix does so much good in our community. If they choose to donate politically one way, why should they be persecuted for it? They are a wonderful asset to the South Florida community, and we love them, you know. They didn't cause any of the problems that happened. They're not the... You know, it just—I don't feel that a good, wholesome business should be persecuted by a few political beliefs or donations.
All right, Chris, thanks for your thoughts there here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800 is our statewide phone number.
And let's go to Martha in Miami. Hey, Martha, happy Friday.
Hi, happy Friday to you. I'm a native Miamian. I'm shopped at Publix my whole life. I will not shop at Publix again. I don't think they should support any candidate, Democrat or Republican, but here's my problem with Publix. Published last Wednesday, May 16th, in the Herald, it reported that in 2016, 7 Tampa Bay Publix stores failed health inspections for rodent droppings and various other serious health offenses. At the time, the state published those results on a website so everybody could see. Within 24 hours, Adam Putnam, through his connection to Publix, we surmise, used his position in state government to remove that website. And within 6 months, he changed the rules so that whenever a business fails...
Martha, I'm going to interrupt just because your phone's a little scratchy and it's kind of hard to hear you. But Gary or Dan, is this the story ring a bell with either of you?
Oh, sure. Not only was This not only shut down these reports, but it also shut down the entire way that that the state does health inspections. You know, we used to do this pass-fail inspection, and now we do grades, which, to be fair, is the way that most other states handle health inspections. The pass-fail was something of an anomaly.
But it's the appearance of a cozy relationship that she's getting at, right, Dan? Because the Agriculture Commissioner, Adam Putnam, who's a candidate for governor, took this big donation from Publix, and he's the one who decided to stop issuing pass-fail grades for grocery stores like the ones in the Publix chain that failed their health inspections.
Oh, sure. I mean, the appearance is not good. You know, the appearance certainly looks like pay-for-play, absolutely.
More of your phone calls here. Publix and political contributions. Warren in Delray Beach in South Florida. You've been holding on. Warren, go ahead. Your thoughts.
Thank you for allowing me to participate. Let me be, as a good journalist would be here, and look at both sides of the two issues. On one hand, I acknowledge the constitutional right to bear arms. But I don't like people who obsess over having... For me, the right to bear arms has to do with wearing a short-sleeve shirt. Regarding Publix, I can go into a Publix and see a picture of George Washington Jenkins, the founder of the place, kindly looking, and see a photo of his doing philanthropy in the community, and I acknowledge that. On the other hand, as I understand it, my dear folks, the textbook definition of fascism is when private industry is hand-in-hand with government, the implications being that private industry therefore brings, shall we say, influence to bear on legislators to do make laws that benefit the private industries, and I might add, frequently to the detriment of the little folks out there. And here in Florida, I have found a few things, which is wages tend to be very poor. They give you this stuff about right to work, but it's really more to do with keeping people from being unionized and getting their fair share of the productivity they provide. And to conclude, I would say that the National Business Roundtable and or the Bilderberg Group in Europe are pulling the strings on the politicians and basically running the world.
Well, Warren, let me ask you this. As a Publix customer, and I'm going to presume that at some point in your life you've entered a Publix and
have
committed some commerce with them.
I've committed the crime of buying two-for-one macaronis.
And what about those subs? How about the subs?
But some of that money
some
of that money winds up, you know, Publix can use the profit how it seems fit.
Yes, it can.
And some of that may wind up as political contributions.
Yes, they do, as the other corporations do.
That's
but
correct.
Again, I find it disturbing and not surprising that the big corporations are doing these things and influencing candidates. And I find it almost invariably to be to the detriment of the common people trying to survive in the so-called United States of
Warren,
America.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Be sure to use some suntan lotion if you're bearing your arms.
I've already had enough carcinomas. Thank you.
Fair enough. Warren in Delray Beach.
Lots of calls, emails, tweets coming into the Florida Roundup. Shauna tweets the show, all companies should be banned from contributing to campaigns. Employees can contribute individually, but companies are just one step away from bribery when they do. Citizens United was a mistake. She says, imagine what our politics would be like if companies couldn't donate. Lots of calls coming into the show at 305-995-1800. Gary, find out, of course, this whole kerfuffle over Publix and Adam Putnam. It's just really part of the bigger story in Florida, which is that it's kind of like the Wild West when it comes to our campaign finance laws. We're going to be talking about that in a little bit here on the show. Let's go quickly to Jonathan in Fort Lauderdale, though, real quickly. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yes, hello. So Publix states that they like Putnam because he's pro-business. But at the same time, I mean, Putnam has some statements where he's anti-immigrant, pro-gun, calls himself a sellout. So Publix is really in for a penny and in for a pound with Putnam. You can't really just pick and choose, oh, we like him because of one reason, and we're going to turn a blind eye to all of these other reasons. So I am participating in this boycott, even though I've shopped at Publix for now about 20 years, and I like how they treat their employees, but I don't like how they're treating Florida politics. And that's my comment.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Gary, find out. If people want to boycott Publix, they can, although it's not always super convenient. There's a Publix just about in every community in this state, and you can't always say that about every other grocery chain.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that obviously there's a lot of competition in the grocery business. And the thing about it is that some of the other chains over the years have also been politically involved. Winn-Dixie at one point in time had a great deal of influence. And I know we're going to get into it at another point. But the point is that, as I said earlier, a lot of Florida businesses invest a lot of money, and most of that money goes to Republicans and Republican candidates because they control state government, and therefore they control the regulatory environment, and they control the tax environment.
Dan Sweeney, we're coming up on a break here, but real quick, to Jonathan's point, that, you know, if a business is making a contribution to a politician, if they're in for a penny, they're in for a pound. Same goes for voters, too.
The whole idea that there's always a lesser of two evils, you know, quality to voting certainly holds. You know, I mean, you go in there and you vote for the person that best reflects your own values, and you're never going to 100% agree with anybody.
That's always the way politics goes. And Dan Sweeney with the South Florida Sun Sentinel joining us via Skype. Gary Fineout from the Associated Press will continue for the full hour with us here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We are coming right back. Keep listening. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks for listening this week.
Well, Tom, Florida's open to interpretation. Campaign finance laws mean just about anything goes when it comes to putting big money into elections. We were just talking about Publix's donation. Well, that's just one out of so many we could talk about. In fact, more than $13 million has gone into TV ads for the half a dozen or so Republicans and Democrats who are trying to become governor.
Yeah, some of the groups behind these ads say they have no legal responsibility to reveal who's paying for them. Campaigns also find ways to get around some of these rules designed to limit funding by big donors. For example, the group, the National Liberty Federation, it is running television ads going right after U.S. Representative Ron DeSantis and his gubernatorial hopes.
It was supposed to be a revolution to take back Washington. But when Ron DeSantis got elected, it was like he couldn't wait to be part of the in crowd. Is this the swamp creature we want to lead Florida? National Liberty Federation, Inc. is responsible for the content of this message.
There's that disclosure right at the end that you're so familiar with around these times in politics. Gary Fineout covers politics for the Associated Press with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. Dan Sweeney covering politics and all the sundry kinds of things for the Sun Sentinel with us via Skype. Gary, what's the use of having some of these campaign finance laws if they're full of all these loopholes within the state?
I think that's a very excellent question. The fact of the matter is that the laws have kind of been tweaked and retweaked and shaped over the last 15 to 20 years. And essentially what happened the last time they did a major overhaul is they kind of created this dual structure where they said, okay, the candidates, you have a certain amount that people, there's cap and donations that go directly to the candidates. But the candidates can set up these separate committees and that they can raise unlimited amounts, and the donations can from whomever. and it's just basically, and then the committee supposedly has restrictions, some restrictions on what it can and can't do. But the point is that those distinctions are kind of blurred, and even if you supposedly break the rules, there's not really any way to stop you from doing what you're doing. I mean, there's not any entity that's going to say, oh, you're running an ad that you're not supposed to be running. You need to take it off the air. That's not really going to happen. And I think what people need to understand is so what happens is that, like we were talking about Publix earlier, Publix gave the great lion's share of its money and the corporate officers, they gave it to Adam Putnam's committee called Florida Grown. Now, technically, Florida Grown can't air an ad that says vote for Adam Putnam. But they can put up an ad with Adam Putnam's likeness in it. And in fact, the first ad that he had running statewide was him talking about faith and family. Now, when I talked to an attorney who was with the campaign, they're like, well, this is an issues ad. So hence, if it's an issue, it's a free speech issue. So therefore, right. And what's the issue in the ad? Adam Putnam saying, I believe in faith, I believe in family, I believe in Florida.
It's the issue of the personality or the person is the issue, maybe.
And in fact, Gary, as you write about this, it's really striking to me to talk about how our campaign finance laws are so arcane and murky that they really have no practical effect at all. What are your thoughts about how people who advocate for campaign finance reform in America call Florida sort of the poster child for why we need campaign finance reform? Is Florida the ultimate sort of Wild West when it comes to how these campaigns are funded and promoted on TV?
Well, as I said, there are laws and there are rules, and they kind of exist. But I think the thing is that people kind of like they kind of get up to the edge and they say, well, we think that we can interpret it this way and therefore we're not breaking the law. And as I said, from a regulatory standpoint, even if you think that they broke the law, you file a complaint with the Florida Elections Commission and then it takes months for them to act. Now, theoretically, if they find a violation, you could get hit with a substantial fine, but that really hardly ever happens. And even if it did happen, it would happen like a year from now when the consequence is over. I mean, the election's already happened. The ads have already had their impact. So the point is that there's really, I mean, I guess the point is there's not a whole heck of a lot of deterrence from even if you wanted to just go all the way in and say, I'm not going to pay attention to any of these laws.
Right. And we listened to that ad a moment ago from a third party group called the National Liberty Federation. They've got an ad up on television now attacking Ron DeSantis, Congressman Ron DeSantis, Of course, his bid for governor has opened up his seat in Congress. And this week, a Republican who would like to succeed him, a guy named John Ward, told the Mount Dora Republican Club that he doesn't think Puerto Ricans who come to Florida after Hurricane Maria should be able to sign up to vote.
First of all, I don't think they should be allowed to register to vote. And you know, it's not lost on me that I think the Democrat Party's really hoping that they can change kind of the voting registers in a lot of counties and districts. And I don't think they should be allowed to do that.
Of course, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. They can vote in any state once they complete their paperwork in the state they live in. There's been a widespread backlash to Ward's remarks. He later clarified, Tom, that he welcomes Puerto Ricans to Florida registering to vote here, but only if they move here, in his words, permanently.
Yeah, Republican State Representative Bob Cortez of Altamont Springs endorsed a different Republican in that race after these comments. Representative Cortez joins us now via Skype. Was this comment, Representative, the tipping point for you?
Absolutely. It was the tipping point because it was, in my opinion, it showed the ignorance of a candidate that is vying for a congressional seat and his lack of knowledge of the Constitution.
So you mark this up to a lack of knowledge as opposed to any ideology per se?
Absolutely. So a lack of knowledge, and it happens more quite often that folks that do not understand how the makeup of Puerto Ricans being U.S. citizens and that they are allowed to freely move wherever they want to move, and for that matter, register to vote wherever they want to register to vote, is a constitutional right.
He did bring politics into that comment that we just played, saying that, quote, you know, it's not lost on me that I think the Democrat Party is really hoping that they can change kind of the voting registers in a lot of counties and districts. So he squarely made his comment about politics.
Again, another misinformed and uninformed type of issue. The folks that have come from Maria since the storm have not been registering Democrat or Republican, for that matter. Almost 70% of these newly arrivals are registering NPA, and there's a reason for that. Most of them don't understand the ideology of the party.
What are your thoughts, Representative Cortez, about how the two major parties, though, will try to capture some of that Puerto Rican vote? It could make a difference in this state on the margins in some of these closer races. And do you think the Republican Party could potentially be alienating Hispanic and Puerto Rican voters with some of these incidents? Also, the fact that as we begin hurricane season now in a few days, there are still some 20,000 Puerto Ricans without power.
Absolutely. And let's start with that part first. The 20,000 Puerto Ricans without power, the reason for their without power is that the region that has no power was the hardest hit. This is exactly where the storm went in full force, and it wasn't just power lines down. It disseminated the whole infrastructure, which if would have happened anywhere else, it would have taken a while to get back. So less than 2%. So 98% of the island is with power, and it continues to increment, and they have to rebuild the grid. So let's go on the Republican side. I am a Republican, and the comments that Mr. Ward said, I do not share. As a Republican and him a Republican, I disagree, and I did not share it. I made it public. We are doing everything we can to make sure that we outreach to the Puerto Ricans that are here. And you're right. They will be a factor in elections for years to come.
We're speaking with Republican State Representative Bob Cortez from Altamont Springs about comments that a Republican congressional hopeful in the 6th District, John Ward, mentioned this week, saying that he did not think that Puerto Ricans in Florida who came here because of Hurricane Maria should be allowed to register to vote. Representative Cortez, a colleague of yours, Representative Robert Asensio, is along with us as well, a Democrat representing parts of Miami-Dade County. Representative Asensio has been very active in Puerto Rican issues as well. I want to bring this back, Representative Asensio, to John Ward's comments and your fellow Representative Bob Cortez's comments. He thought it was out of ignorance. Any thoughts that what John Ward said was out of ignorance or ideology?
It's a sad state that he would make those comments. I don't think it's so much ignorance. Look, we know that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. We know that they're coming. Many of them have come over to the States. A good percentage of those who have come off the island for humanitarian reasons or because of the storm have come to Florida. The reality is that we're in an election cycle. I'm up for re-election. My colleague Bob Cortez is up for re-election. Ward is attempting to be elected. Mm-hmm. We are chasing votes. The reality is that, you know, there's a sentiment that Puerto Ricans who are coming over are Democrats. Not necessarily the case, as my colleague Bob Cortez mentioned. Many of them are registering independent, but that's a cross section of society right now, the votership. So this comment, I ask, is it in line with some of the recent other attacks on voter suppression? In a state where elections are being defined by a couple votes, if you will, in my case, 53 votes, each vote counts.
And
vote
identity counts. Politics yes, plays sir. Quite a lot. Representative Cortez, how would you respond to Representative Asensio?
Well, and Representative Asensio, we work well together. And the issues, when it comes to issues of Puerto Rico, we all agree that it's not a Republican versus Democrat thing. This is all more of a cultural thing that we all share. And we are very protective when it comes to issues regarding the Puerto Ricans. And he and I have both visited the island more than once since the storm. So I believe still it's just a matter of, on many fronts, misinformed folks that when it comes to the issues of Puerto Rico, they are not informed, and we are doing a job of trying to inform politely.
Politics in Puerto Rico is where we're at here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800 is the phone number to join in the conversation. Gary Fineout, let me bring you back in. The Associated Press in Tallahassee. Both representatives here talked about this influx of Puerto Ricans coming from Hurricane Maria into Florida. A good majority of them registering for non-party affiliate. That means that they're not going to be able to participate in the August primary. They're not going to be able to vote in the primary, Gary. How could that change the messaging we hear from the John Wards of the world and others?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if they do, in fact, register as MPA, yes, they will not be able to participate in the primary, as you said. I think the issue that I think is obvious, though, is that part of why Mr. Ward's comments, I think, caught people a bit this when they were publicized, was the fact that both parties are making outreach efforts. You've seen U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, and you've seen Governor Scott. They have made repeated efforts to demonstrate to Puerto Rican voters that they do care about the situation in Puerto Rico, and that they want to help them, and it's a concentrated effort. And I think the reason, I want to say the reason is because they care, but also I think another reason is that I think there is a concern that Puerto Rican voters who have come to Florida, will they sort of get their revenge, for lack of a better word, at the ballot box?
Yeah.
Will they, in fact, take umbrage at the way that they may perceive that the administration and the Trump administration and the federal government responded to the crisis in their country? So I think that is part of the reason why both parties and people in both parties are trying so hard to demonstrate that they do, in fact, want to show that they are concerned about the situation. And so I think the question that you're asking is an excellent one. Was Mr. Ward's comments, as Representative Cortez said, simply not being cognizant of the situation with Puerto Ricans in terms of their citizenship status, or was it a statement that he thought was going to play well with the GOP primary base?
That's right, and you're listening to the Florida Roundup right now this Friday from Florida Public Radio. Lane tweets the show, Puerto Ricans may be here a long time. See Hurricane Katrina. It's entirely proper that they should register and vote. Representative Cortez, that's a good historical analogy. There are plenty of folks right here in North Florida where I'm sitting who evacuated here from Louisiana after Katrina, and they stayed. They're still here today.
And absolutely, and this is exactly what it's been happening in Florida, even prior to the storm. Puerto Ricans have been moving to Florida for years. I came in 1989 myself, and back when I came, there weren't many, and now there's over 1.1 million living in Florida. Florida has become the preference of the Puerto Ricans coming, leaving the island, even more so than New York. So the storm just exacerbated it for the moment, but it's something that was already happening.
I have another question for you as well, Representative Asensio. When John Ward made his comments in Mount Dora, he referred to the Democrat Party. in Republican primary circles, saying Democrat Party rather than Democratic Party is sort of code, isn't it? It's sort of almost an epithet.
Sure. I mean, look, it goes back to the fact that many believe that the Puerto Rican vote is Democrat. They're Democrat-leaning on the island. Then when they come here, it's assumed. But again, I have to say, this comment goes back to a practice that we've seen throughout the state of, you know, it's in line with voter suppression, if you will. You know, Puerto Ricans, yes, as the tweet person who tweeted said, they're going to be here. And they're increasingly migrating across the state. We now see a larger number coming to South Florida.
I was just going to mention that. You know, the traditional place for the Puerto Rican immigration into Florida has been Central Florida and the I-4 corridor. Clearly, that was the case even after Hurricane Maria representatives. We've seen it in South Florida, but increasingly you've seen it in Southwest Florida as well, which has been a Republican stronghold for the State House and the State Senate, for instance.
Absolutely. And there is a fear. There is a fear. I mean, let's face it. These seats in elected office represent the power play of policy, creation of policy. And both sides want to retain their seats. And we can't escape the fact that currently we've seen across the political landscape, across the electorate, that many seats are changing. Some are changing from red to blue. Others are changing a little bit to blue. But we see more Democrats winning. And we see that where the landscape, ethnic politics are definitely defining the course of the state. I will tell you that this is a very, very telling point in our state's history and also on the island, because what we do here in the state will affect the island and their reconstruction and the future of where they go on the island.
Yeah.
So it's very important for us not to lose sight of what's happening and what the impact of this particular comment that was made.
Melissa, we've certainly seen that manifest itself in the U.S. Senate race with Governor Scott, obviously very active, not only here in Florida, dealing with the influx of Puerto Ricans, but traveling quite frequently to the island after Hurricane Maria.
Absolutely. And as we continue talking about this, Puerto Ricans coming to Florida, how could it affect the midterm elections? What are your thoughts about one candidate for Congress saying Puerto Ricans shouldn't be allowed to vote in our election? They are U.S. citizens. We have so many people waiting on hold. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800 as we continue our conversation here in just a few moments. We'll be right back.
We're back on the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville as we continue our conversation right now with Republican State Representative Bob Cortez, Democratic Representative Robert Asensio, and Gary Finat of the Associated Press. 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup. Let's go to Frank in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Frank.
Frank, you're on the radio.
Go ahead, Frank.
Hello, I'm here, but I thought you recorded it already.
Nope, we're live. Go ahead. You are on the radio.
Okay, good enough. What I wanted to say was, as far as the issue of Puerto Ricans voting, they're already U.S. citizens, and I think it stops right there, just like Harry Truman used to say, the buck stops here, albeit some Puerto Rican nationals tried to assassinate him one time. Still, that's the way it goes. I mean, you know, he has a right to, or excuse me, not he, but the Puerto Rican people have the right to vote in this country. And that's it. I mean, what else can you say about it? They're not illegal immigrants or anything like that.
Thank you, Frank. And Representative Cortez, he referenced President Truman and a little known wrinkle of history involving Puerto Rico. I think you said earlier in our discussion, most Americans on the mainland anyway, aren't really familiar with the history of Puerto Rico and everything that happens on the island, which I think is part of the subtext of what we're talking about here this afternoon, right?
That's correct. And remember, Puerto Rico became a obtained its status with its constitution in 1952, where it has its own governor and legislature and everything else. But it's still, till this day, still an unincorporated territory of the United States, which means it does not have the or is not treated as a state and does not have the sovereignty under the 10th Amendment. So many issues are treated. And of course, Puerto Ricans cannot vote for their own president while they're on the island. But yet, the minute they move to Florida and register to vote, which they can vote for their president or their congressional.
Well, so let's continue the history lesson and have about a little bit of a civics lesson here with Rhea in Miami. You've got a question. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I was wondering, what are the requirements to vote for local elections in Florida? It cannot be that you just move here. Is there a residency requirement or any other type of requirement?
The eligibility to vote in the state of Florida. Either the representatives want to tackle that one?
Well, sure, I can take that one. Basically, residency is defined. So let's give an example of many folks that came from Puerto Rico and that came through our MARC centers that were established by the government. They came and they brought their documentation. They changed their licenses. And under the motor voter laws, they can they're actually required to ask them if they want to register to vote in, then and there. Remember, we do have the Real ID Act here, which requests ID and residency. So the key word here is residency. What is established residency? We would say if you got an apartment or you're living somewhere and you got a power bill, a water bill, and you're living here, that's right. Residency.
Right.
So
right. That's
all you need.
And it doesn't have to be Representative Asensio for a month or for 6 months or for a year. It's the day of.
That is correct. That is correct. And you know, we let's not forget the fact that there are many families in Florida who came not just from Puerto Rico, but the Caribbean, but specifically Puerto Rico, that are still living in hotels under temporary shelter assistance. And that is set to run out June 30th.
Right. It's been extended already by the Federal Emergency Management Association.
That is correct. There's a sentiment that the state and the federal government hasn't done enough to alleviate those that are coming here based on humanitarian reasons.
You agree with that sentiment?
Yes, because you look at it in totality. Let's go back. We cannot forget, as the caller pointed out earlier, these are U.S. citizens, okay? Whether Puerto Rico is a territory or not, it is part of the United States. So after the storm hits on September 20th, the morning, as soon as the sun is up, the Landsats, the satellite, should have seen the vast devastation. We should have ships in motion, U.S. Ships. We have resources and assets in the area that we should have brought in. The fact that here we are all these months later and the power grid is still down, the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers has pulled out, right. The fact that many contractors off the island and a percentage of the island has no power and the majority of the island has unstable power is unacceptable. As a U.S. citizen, as a like the person, and as a taxpayer, I think that's just unacceptable. And that is proof of what the government hasn't done. So much so that I want to point out the diaspora, if you will, the public has filled the void of the government fairly quickly. I mean, the failure to act quickly and deploy assets to the island.
Public contributions and public donations have filled that void on the island for the Puerto Ricans left.
Yes, yeah. Humanitarian aid,
and
food,
how about Chef Jose Andres from New York? He's cooked more meals for Puerto Ricans on the island than anyone from the government in an official right. capacity. Private efforts like that. And Gary, find out this district John Ward is running for Congress in. It's sort of in this area in between Orlando and Jacksonville, the seat Ron DeSantis is vacating to run for governor. Puerto Rican votes are increasingly going to be a factor in a district like that one, as we've been talking about.
I would say that I'm not as certain as the impact on Puerto Rican vote in that district as I would be on some of the other ones. Obviously, Darren Soto, who is from Central Florida, was elected to Congress, and he is of he's Puerto Rican ancestry, and so I think what we're seeing is more of it is in Osceola County and Orange County and things of that nature. I think more directly impacted and on the elections, and I think Representative Cortez, I'm sure, could speak to that in terms mm-hmm. of how things are going in that. And in fact, it's been interesting as we have seen, we've seen more people from Puerto Rico who have come to this country and are living in Florida, who in that Central Florida area are more entering politics. And I think that's a – I think I don't remember when the first candidate – people from that area came into
– Representative Asensio is pointing to himself in that comment, Gary. Representative Asensio is – if we give a selfie examination of that, absolutely.
And this is the Florida Roundup this Friday. You're listening to us on Florida Public Radio. Let's go to Lisa in Miami-Dade. Lisa, are you there?
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Can everybody hear me? So I think it's absolutely shameful. It's absolutely shameful that we're even having this conversation. We have been, not only have Puerto Ricans been part of this country since the 1800s, but we've fought in every major military engagement since the early 1900s. That should automatically preclude us to have immediate rights to vote. And I think that it's not only ignorant, and it's shameful and continues to be shameful that these politicians continue to write on these platforms. It is absolutely, and it drives me insane that we're even having this conversation since more than 100 years of us being part of this country and not having, one, understood historically what we mean to this country, and number two, that we've contributed to not only the military but also health sector of this country and improvement, and that's remained completely unknown, and folks don't ask the question.
Lisa, are you referring to some of the pharmaceutical manufacturing that takes place in Puerto Rico?
Gotcha. Absolutely. Yeah. Not only that, but also the testing of different drugs and the way that that went about, and the misinformation that we're giving to these people. So we've contributed on multiple factors to this country. And why are we still having this conversation? Why do we still not have power? Why? And I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the education of our people. We have to get out there and we have to educate people, because this is ridiculous that we don't know that we come to this country and we're registering as independent voters. We need to have our voice heard.
Lisa, let me ask you, as registered as independent voter, as I mentioned earlier, that means you're not going to be able to participate in the primary in August.
Exactly.
So are you still going to retain that independent voting registration, at least during the summer months?
No, I was born in the U.S. My parents came in the 70s.
Gotcha.
And so I think that if you go and you change your registration on your vehicle license, then you should automatically vote. But I think that there has to be, at the grassroots, education of folks coming in, because they've never had this right. They've never encountered this. And a lot of people don't know. So I think that we need to educate them. I think we need to start to build a community of unionization so that we have a voice, so that we are heard. It is unacceptable that we don't have power, that people are dying.
Lisa, I think so many share your frustration. And as we are short on time, we're going to have to make a commitment to keep bringing this topic up on the Florida Roundup. It's an important one. Gary Fineout from the Associated Press with us today, along with Representative Robert Asensio, Democrat in Miami, Representative Bob Cortez, Republican of Altamont Springs, all with us as we discuss how Puerto Rican and Florida politics are so intertwined. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show this Friday, and thanks to all the callers as well. A really spirited discussion. We really appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us as we head into this holiday weekend. Well, finally this hour, it looks like someone in the South Florida city of Lake Worth is a really big fan of the hit show The Walking Dead. Maybe a little too big. A city power outage alert Sunday in Lake Worth caused a little alarm among residents because it mentioned zombies. That's right, zombies. Tom, what is going on down there?
I don't know, Melissa. We got a lot of things that can cause power outages, iguanas and tropical storms, but now zombies we have to worry about? I mean, come on. This message was sent out during a power outage about 1:45 in the morning. Now, it also warned of a zombie alert for Lake Worth and Terminus, possibly referencing the city in the zombie TV show The Walking Dead.
Now, city officials eventually responded and said the message was unintended. The city manager said, quote, "I want to reiterate that Lake Worth doesn't have any zombie activity currently." And he apologized for the message. You know, I guess anything goes in Lake Worth. I just don't know.
Certainly after midnight, Melissa.
That's right. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Kevin Merchart and Gina Jordan are producers.
Jason Zapka, our technical director. WLRN's program director is Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a happy Memorial Day weekend and watch out for zombie activity.